friends, it's Tracy Porterfield, and welcome back to Life Reinvented, where we talk about discovering and rediscovering the why in our life. Our lives don't always work out the way we want them to, and we can get stuck, sad, frustrated, angry, and sometimes just blah. And when we decide we want to feel or live a little bit better, be a little happier, be inspired to change, reinvent ourselves, what we listen to and who we spend time with make all the difference in the world. So thank you for choosing to listen in as we truly are better together. And learning from each other helps us grow even faster. Okay, I've been taking a little break from podcasting. Business was busy and I've been gone for a couple of months. And I'm coming back with a bang. Let me just tell you that today's conversation is one that I hope will stay with you for a long time. My guest, Captain Tom Heidema, was living his dream as a commercial airline pilot. He was healthy. He was successful. He was deeply passionate about aviation until one night, completely unexpectedly, he experienced sudden cardiac arrest. After 20 minutes of CPR and 7 defibrillator shocks, Tom came back with a story that truly defies logic and opens the heart. He was clinically dead for 20 minutes. I'm going to let him tell you about that. In this episode, we're going to talk what it feels like to die and return. We're going to talk about the near-death experience that changed everything for him, how it transformed his relationship with life and death, and what he now knows about the beauty that exists on the other side. This is absolutely a topic I am passionate about. I'm so excited to share it with you guys. If you've lost someone, if you've navigated grief, if you're currently navigating grief, if you've ever just wondered what's beyond this life, this conversation today is going to be for you. So let's jump into his story of faith, awe, and purpose reborn. Tom, welcome.
Hi.
It's welcome.
So nice to be here.
Welcome to Life Reinvented. I have been excited about this conversation for months. Tom and I have known each other probably 12 or 13 years, and we were at a mutual friend's party, I don't know, like 6 months or 8 months, who knows?
A year ago.
Yeah. And we started talking about this story, and I was like, oh my gosh, you have to come on my podcast and tell this story. Like, it's just so inspiring. Can I read your little clip from Amazon?
Of course.
Okay. I just thought it was so good. It's short and sweet, and I think it's very telling. It says, an irreverent kid is saved by flying. From a Cessna 150 to the captain's seat of a Boeing 787 Dreamliner, he commits his career to serving others within his field. Captain Tom is at the pinnacle of his profession, traveling the globe, a social media influencer, and a health and fitness advocate. One night, his life comes to a screeching halt when an undiagnosed heart defect triggers sudden cardiac arrest. After 20 minutes of CPR and 7 defibrillator shocks, he is miraculously revived. Having had a profound afterlife experience, he returns to the living and reshapes his life to inspire others. No longer allowed to fly, he forged a new path to complete his aviation legacy. His new book, Flying and Dying, is a remarkable story of that journey. I have read it. I can't wait to talk about it. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
What year was that? That actually happened?
It was November 2022, so about 2.5 years ago.
Okay, November 2022. Gotcha. So,
November 4th, actually. It's kind of a day I celebrate every year now because I call it the date that I died, but also a date that I came back to life. It's a rebirth day. They often call it that. The sudden cardiac arrest survivors refer to it as a rebirth day.
That's an excellent thing to celebrate for sure. And your statistics, can you just like share a little before we dig into like what actually happened and your story? Can you share those statistics at the like how long you were gone? What happened?
Well, out of hospital cardiac arrest has, according to the American Heart Association, I don't know if they've updated their numbers, but typically it's a 90%+ fatality. If a shock is not delivered within the first 10 minutes after that, it's anybody's game. In my case, I think mine was about a 98% fatality rate. The problem is when the brain is deprived of oxygen for a certain amount of time, brain damage is inevitable. And in my case, the 2% who do survive are typically they're cognitively impaired. They have physical issues. There's so much recovery involved in just trying to relive a normal life at that point. And I came back to life, and 5 hours later, I woke up in the hospital, and I was like, "What the happened?" And they're like, "Oh my gosh, he's talking. It's Tom." And after that, I was like, I gotta tell you where I went, what I saw. It was. But in any case, that I am very, very fortunate to be a very, very small percentage of cardiac arrest survivors who had, even after that amount of time, no long-term impairment.
So they said for 20 minutes you were clinically dead with no pulse.
That's correct.
And during that time, you had an experience that we are going to dig into today because I can't freaking wait.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. It was quite a trip.
So tell a little bit about your backstory. I mean, I want to talk about the spiritual part, but talk about, because this book, Flying and Dying, is your whole background was like this career in aviation. Tell a little bit about your backstory and how you got to be that captain.
I was a kind of a troublemaker as a kid. My mom had two hopes for me. One was that I wouldn't be in jail, and the other is that I would have a job. And when I was about 14 years old, I discovered flying. And I took a little introductory plane ride, and I was able to focus my energy on something I absolutely loved. Pilots are, they're the biggest geeks you can imagine. Anything from hummingbirds to helicopters, that's all they think about, talk about. And I was one of those. So I found something that I loved, and I pursued all my licenses and worked hard at it. It was a huge commitment, but by the time I was 24 years old, I was working for American Airlines. Oh. And so the dream came true. And at that point, I just wanted to learn airplanes. And my ninth airplane at American is a Boeing 787 Dreamliner. The first one was a Boeing 727. I flew as a flight engineer and then got all three seats of that one. Needless to say, I loved flying airplanes, and it paved its way into a really great career that I now am trying to pass along to others. I try to mentor others who have that same passion, because we truly are birds of a feather when it comes to flying.
And what I would like to say about that is, you know, it's kind of a sidebar, but it's so true, is finding something that you're passionate about. Not everyone's great at school. If you're a little bit of a troublemaker and you don't like school, or your kids don't like school, like, I think this is probably towards the parents also. Like, if your expectation, you have low expectations to just stay out of jail and get a job, the kids are going to rise to that level of your expectation, right? So have some higher expectations, but also the current school system doesn't support anything other than just compliance. Sorry, I'll get off my soapbox. But I think that for people that do not fit into that mold, help them find their way.
Yeah, you have to find that thing you love. It's out there. You just have to open your heart and your mind to it.
Mm-hmm. I remember you saying in the book that one birthday party you requested just to go to the airport to watch the planes or something.
I remember. Well, yeah, it's toward the end. That's all I want to do, is look at airplanes. They were magnificent to me. I was maybe 8 or 9 years old. And what was interesting, and I wrote about it in the book, is that as my brother and I were chasing each other around an observation deck, a American Airlines Boeing 727-100 series taxied behind us. And you could catch it in the frame. And little did I know that 25 years later, I would be the captain of that airplane. I think those things lasted a long time. We had those planes forever, but they just became very fuel inefficient. And at that point, we had to park them. But it was kind of interesting to see that on that old film clip from the 1960s.
A little foreshadowing for you.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, you know, I think also, let's talk about the night that your heart stopped. Can we start there?
Sure. Absolutely.
And I'd want to reiterate what you just said with the statistics, because I find it absolutely fascinating. Out of hospital cardiac arrest has an abysmal 10% survival rate. Like, if and you were at home in your bed, right?
Right.
And it falls and even
lower. You have to have someone give you CPR too. If you just go into cardiac arrest, you likely will not survive. It's close to 100% at that point.
And it falls even lower. So if the first shock is delivered after 10 minutes, right? So
right.
CPR and the defibrillator. That's a hard word for me to say. Defibrillator.
AED, automatic external defibrillator. You call it that too.
AED. Okay, we'll go with that. Tell me about what you remember about that night.
I was, my sweetie and I were down in the sauna. We have a sauna in the house, and that's something we would often do prior to going to bed. Just kind of felt warm, and it was connective and did a little stretching, and it kind of put us in the in a little bit of a calmer realm, to where you take the stresses of the day and then go into the sauna, and then after that, just it would lend itself to a nice night of sleep. I'd gotten in the habit of taking a cold shower after the heat, so the heat would draw all the blood to your skin, to where it tries to cool itself, and then you go into a cold shower. It's like an ice bath. All that blood rushes back into your vital organs, and which is, I hear it's pretty good for you. In my case, with a congenital heart defect, it wasn't a very good thing because I had an oversized heart. And my sweetie went upstairs, and she was laying in bed, and I took my cold shower, and I'm like, ooh, something doesn't quite feel right. It was just a slight nausea, but nothing other than that, nothing I really was thinking much about. And I went upstairs, and I lay down in bed next to her. And the last thing I remember was her saying, hey, you want me to turn off the light? Now, I was fortunate in so many different ways with this. One of the things was that she was even there. Often we'd sleep in different rooms. I'm on layovers with trips. When I get back, my body clock is different, so I wouldn't go to bed till hours after her or before or whatever. So the fact that we were in bed at the same time was a rarity in and of itself. At that point, I just remember her saying, well, turn the light off. I said, no, I'm okay. And I went, and that was the last thing I remember. I remember a quick pain in my chest, and then the lights went out. It's not like a heart attack. People often mistake sudden cardiac arrest with a heart attack. It's not. A heart attack is typically caused by a blockage to the heart. The heart still pumps, but it's not getting enough blood flow. A sudden cardiac arrest is more an electrical thing where the heart stops. It just stops right there. So you go out immediately, and you don't know what happened. And if you're not next to somebody who can start immediate CPR, you in all likelihood will not survive. Now, that number, when it comes to survivability, if somebody is able to get to an AED quickly, within the next few minutes, now that number comes way up. You can have a 90% survival rate. Damar Hamlin, the football player, for instance, had people right on him. He had immediate shock. His survivability was much higher than somebody who has to wait for an ambulance to show up. An interesting stat, the NCAA released their 2022, I think the year of my cardiac arrest, the number one reason of athlete death for these college athletes was sudden cardiac arrest. They lost 144 people died in 2022 who are college athletes.
That's
and
ridiculous.
We've all heard about that young person who is playing basketball and suddenly collapsed. And so recognition of that CPR and a close by AED will bring that number way into a more favorable percentage if those AEDs exist in public places and if people know CPR.
Okay. So you flatlined for nearly 20 minutes.
I did.
And your wife was doing CPR.
She was.
On you and calling 911.
She called 911. I turned blue. The first thing she was like, I know he hates hospitals. Is he okay? She's rolled me over and thought maybe I'd snap out of it. She's like, oh, he's going to be so mad that I called 911. But it was just a minute and a half, 2 minutes later, she called and somebody was monitoring the 911. I think the ambulance service had compressions. And that's the CPR started at that point. She is CPR certified, as is my son.
Okay.
My son had just come home, and there are all these incredible little miracles that lined up. when he came home, he jumped on me, started doing CPR. My wife went downstairs and opened the front door to let the medical people in and the EMS. And the captain of that medical team, Clay Hollister, is a friend of mine. I worked out next to him too. I think we did a yoga practice 2 days before that. He was right next to me. We're talking. And I remember seeing on the ring cam him saying, "Is it Tom?" And I could see him had the AED under his arm, and he went upstairs, and that's when they hooked me up. But it had been over 10 minutes that I'd been in cardiac arrest.
So I don't know which way to go. There's two paths right here. So let's continue for that 10 minutes. Let's continue that. And then let's jump into what you saw, what you experienced.
So they started to shock me. And you have to have, there has to be some life, some activity within your heart, I believe, for the AED to fire. So it fired about three times. And at that point, I completely flatlined. I was no longer shockable. An ambulance showed up. There was a traveling medical doctor resident that was traveling with them, which, when does that ever happen? He came up and gave me a shot. I believe it was epinephrine or I'm not sure.
Adrenaline, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just telling from the book.
Somewhere else at the time. So they shot me with that, and it gave me just a little bit of a twitch back into my heart. And at that point, the AED was able to fire again. And then it went to four and five, and they're kind of looking at Clay going, "Look, if he comes back, there's going to be nothing left of him anyway." And they were just going to call it, pull a sheet over my head. And he's like, "No, keep shocking him. Keep shocking him." And after the seventh shock, I went, and the first thing I did is I tried to take a swing at the guy giving me CPR, who told me, he said, "You're the first guy I ever was given CPR to who tried to punch me." And it was a fight or flight thing or something, who knows. But needless to say, it had been in excess of 20 minutes from the initial cardiac arrest to when I came back to life. And then shot me full of stuff because I was fighting everybody. They actually had to kind of secure my arms. It took six of them to hold me down. I came back with a vengeance. And the next thing I remember was, I don't remember any of that, but I do remember waking up in the hospital about 5 or 6 hours later.
So what did you remember about when you left your body?
It was beyond magnificent. And Trace, you know me long enough to know I'm not a church or religion guy. I always check that spiritual but religious, not religious box. I didn't know what happened to us when we died. I don't want to say I didn't have a faith base. For all I knew, we turned into pixie dust and went off into some energy source. So I didn't know. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. I hoped there would be something beyond this, but never gave it much thought. The interesting thing about it for me is my death was instant. It wasn't like I knew I was going to die and I could create this afterlife experience in my brain and live that maybe with an hypoxic episode. It wasn't like that. I didn't think I would die for another 30 years. So the fact that it happened instantly and what happened, the two, what I saw had to be completely real, and it was for many reasons. When I went out of my body, and I did, I went out laterally. You don't go up, you go sideways. And I remember getting out of my body, being in my room, and then going toward a light. The best way to describe it is there is a peace there that is beyond. It's not like, oh my gosh, I just died. I got to get back. You know, can I get back? There is a peace that draws you toward that that is indescribable. There is a love that exists. And now if we have five senses here in the afterlife, I think we probably have 50. And they are so accelerated, so magnificent that as I went toward this light, I remember seeing members of my family. My dad was there and they were waiting for me. And if love in this world is air, in the afterlife, it is a thousand times. It's like a viscous liquid. It encompasses you in a way that gives you such peace and such belonging. And when people say they don't want to come back, I can understand it. And what was so interesting about that love in the afterlife is it is so powerful that you can identify different types of love. For instance, the love you have for your children is different than that that you have for your parents or your friends or your spouse or your pets. And when love is that intense, it's almost as if there is a palette of that that has different flavors, different textures, different. And so I knew right away who my dad was. And we had a posture when he was in his 30s, but I could feel a specific love for him. And that love was something I wish that I had the senses to even describe. And I mean, I do my best with my words when I'm here. As I was there with my family, I remember a kind of a ribbon of light going down into an area that looked a little bit like a heat signature behind like a hot engine. You'll see like a distortion. The one love that I felt was greater than any of the loves I felt was a love from God. Almost like I wasn't worthy of it. Like, my gosh, how can I be this loved right now? And as I traveled to the right toward kind of where this ribbon of light went into that heat signature area, the words I heard were, "What you are feeling are all the kindnesses you've put into the world." Oh. And so there's something to be said, if I could just stop right there with it, is to say that there is an inventory of what we do in this life that goes to the afterlife. And I didn't get to bring any of my good bottles of wine with me, but or anything else, you'll bring wealth, but you do create it here. And the wealth that you create here is what you do for others. It's the love you have for others. That inventories itself into the next life. And sometimes, and it's really hard to have that love and to have that faith and to give those kindnesses to others is when you really got to do it, when you really have to step up to it, because it goes to a different place and it awaits us. And I remember when I heard that, what you're feeling, it was a different kind of love and energy in and of itself when I was there with that feeling. And I thought to myself, where I am right now is eternity. And I know I've left behind those I love. However, when you think about this life with the concept of eternity, this is like one tick of an eternal clock. It's like the space between two letters of a book that's that thick. I don't want to say it doesn't give relevance to this life, but it makes us realize how much more there is beyond this life. And that in that one click that we are here on earth, we got to make it count. You have to do things that are valid, that store themselves or that go to that next life, that next lifetime or that next experience. The next words I heard were, "I want you to go back and continue your work." And at that point, I remember everything going back. And one of the interesting things that I didn't expect after the afterlife is that it's structured and it's organized and there is sense and reason to it. I remember planks of light below me, for instance. It's like, I remember, and I know there are people like, okay, you know, I saw angels and heard music, it was beautiful colors, and there was, I didn't get that deal. I didn't get the VIP, but I'll tell you what, what I felt was well beyond anything. I didn't see any of those things, but I didn't need to, because what the sensory, the love I felt was beyond anything I could ever, ever even dream of having. And for that reason, to me, that was the VIP part of that. I realized that there are other afterlife experiences, near-death experiences, where people say they see things here, and I don't discount any of it. But this was definitely my deal. And at that point, I remember going back and I'm like, well, I really don't need to go back. I'm good here. And I remember seeing my family and the light and going back over that light. And that's when I went back into my body. And I woke up about 5 hours later in the hospital. And I'm like, what happened? Wow. And my chest hurt. I had over 1,000 compressions. I had burns on my body from the defib pads. I wasn't feeling too good. I just remember I wanted to get up and use the bathroom more than anything else. And they're like, no, lay there. You're good. You know, I remember my wife said, you've got a catheter and just go. Okay. Don't try and get up. I was all full, hooked up with wires and everything. They were just very relieved that I was able to communicate. That I was back. And here I am a couple of years later talking about it.
So when I'm going to just back up a little bit so I can ask questions on everything you said.
Yeah, what do you got?
When you say your family was there, your dad was there, obviously your dad is deceased.
Yeah.
And so what is that like? Like, are they just like there? Are they talking to you? Are they holding your hand? Are they guiding you? Are they like, what? Do you just know they're there?
You know, well, no, my dad was there. He didn't say anything, but he was there with the rest of my family. Now, my father, when he was alive, was very introverted. He's a brilliant man who studied. He was an engineer. He's the kind of guy that could fix anything, but it made him not as participatory as a father. He didn't understand children. He didn't understand family. He just wanted to be in the garage rebuilding the Volkswagen Beetle or whatever heck he was rebuilding down there. So he was very non-participatory. I think a lot of it is you're more shown things than told things. And by him being with my family, it was his way of saying, check me out. Look what I'm doing up here. I'm hanging with the family. And this is truly what I have learned or why I'm here. And that patriarchal sense that he may not have always conveyed in life here existed in the afterlife. And it was kind of like he wanted to show me that to make peace with what he may not have always been to me as a father here. And that's why I completely forgave him for all that, because I think we all turned out okay. And I needed to let him be who he was on this earth. And he had his lessons to learn the same way we all have our lessons to learn in life.
Mm-hmm. What do you think for people that maybe don't, I mean, I guess everybody has parents, but maybe they don't know their parents. Like, is there always someone? Is it your belief that there's always someone there greeting everybody?
I believe so. Absolutely. And it doesn't have to be family. What is waiting there is someone or something, whether even if it's a pet. I believe that. I didn't see any pets while I was there, but when somebody has a deep love for a pet, that, yeah, I think that would await you too. That love does come from a dog, a cat, whatever, and you can't dismiss it. It has to exist, and it's there. It's there and it awaits you. In your life, there are those who love you, whether those are your parents on the day you were born, and even if you've had a rough life, there are people who you've come across in life, and I see them. I had an Uber driver recently, and this woman was in Vegas at a convention, and I remember there was the love that came from this woman mirrored a lot of what I felt in the afterlife. She had a huge faith, and I could feel that coming from her. So even if we have people in our lives, to kind of come great circle on that point, is that even if there are people who we just knew for a very short amount of time in our lives, who we loved, who loved us, who we regarded us, that doesn't diminish. That still is a part of the afterlife. You know what? I got a lawnmower coming right next to my office. That's not.
No, I can't hear it.
It's too noisy.
No. And what I would also like to say about that Uber driver is I believe that there are earth angels here. Like there Absolutely. Are people that just are, I believe they're called earth angels, and they're here with love and to be that example and to put that out there and so forth. I also believe wholeheartedly in we all have a spirit team and that we came in with, and maybe it's not like for me, my grandma, I talked to my grandma. Of course, I talked to my dog, Fergie. I'm so happy to hear you say that your dog's waiting because she's going to be waiting there for me. I 1000% know it. But there, we all have a spirit team, and we're not alone, even in times that we feel like we're alone. And if you can embrace that we have this spirit team, it's just the love that you think you don't have, you do have. It is there.
Absolutely.
And so I think your spirit team, and I think most people have someone that they love in their family or somebody that would be there to greet them, your grandparents or somewhere along the way. But in the odd chance that someone says, well, my family was horrible, they're not going to be there to greet me. I think what you just said too about forgiveness and, you know, they show up in a different way at that point. I believe that as well. Mm-hmm. Thank you for saying that. And that we will all be greeted. I've done a lot of deep dives on this subject because I'm fascinated by it. It just is, I love it. And I think when people can realize that there's so much fear around death, right? And how is your relationship with death changed after that experience that you went through?
I don't fear death. I think that we all have purpose here in life. One of the lines I write in the book is that if life is a workout, then death is the warm shower that awaits. But that having been said, you got to break a sweat. You got to do the workout here to earn that shower. We have a saying in the gym, earn the shower. Well, yeah, there are some people it's a more difficult path than others, but it's with purpose. And it's just not always easy, but you have to step up to it.
Another thing that I've read repeatedly and listened to is that people say they experience a life review. Was that any part of anything that you went through?
No, I didn't have that. Now, what I saw, I think, was meant for me because I was sent back.
Mm.
I think I had work to do. And I think it's kind of interesting when the words that I heard were, I want you to go back and continue your work. And of course, me being, oh, I'm a pilot. You know, I'm going back to flying airplanes. Well, if I were to ask you, what's your work? You would tell me your occupation. If God asks you, what's your work? God doesn't care what your occupation is. Your work is what you do here for others.
Oh my gosh.
And my own arrogance, so I guess I'm going back to flying airplanes. Well, it wasn't that. It was to do other things. And that embellishment has taken an entirely different shape since I've come back.
Can we say that again? Because God's not going to ask you whatever, you know, you say God and some people are like, eh, whatever higher power you believe in, if you're asked can you imagine going up there and what is the question? What do you do for work?
Yeah. What is your work?
What kind of work do you do?
Work is not necessarily your occupation.
Your
work on this earth is what you are to others, your own personal growth, your own, what you do to truly be good or be embracing or be being kind or all those things. And it sounds almost basic, but it is.
But I think that, yes, I think I so agree with you. It's not about what is your occupation? What do you do for others? I mean, I think the reason I wanted you on here is because I wanted to spotlight all of this. And I like to spotlight people that are doing things for others. We are all here to help each other. We are better together. Absolutely. And to think of it in terms, like, I actually got a visual when you were saying that, like, I'm standing in front of, you know, God or whatever higher power you want to say, and what do you do for work? He doesn't care that I have a matchmaking company or that I have an executive search firm. Like, what do you do for others? What do you do for others? Where is the love? But I have always believed in love in every capacity. It's not just people think it's just romantic love. And it's not just romantic love. It's love for everybody and all beings and all animals and all things. And and it sounds like that's what you got from your time up there.
Yeah, I did. And like I said, it is a absolute multiplicity of that times what we feel here. This is a very thin slice of what exists in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm. Eternity. And I like to think of that too. Like, this is just a blink of an eye. It's a blink of an eye in everything that we have out there for us. So utilize it to the best of your capacity. And we happen to be in a world that's really pushing us to be divided and to look at hate and look at what's why you're not like me and why you're wrong and everything like that. When what you just experienced is what the real purpose is we all should be coming to here on earth, when we can love each other and find our commonality and just accept those differences. We are all different. Yeah. But I do believe that so much. Yeah. I just love your story. So for someone that's lost somebody or grieving, what do you believe now? Like, what would you tell them? What piece of advice would you tell them? And do you have something specific you would say?
Yeah, absolutely. This,
are they okay on the other side? I think is probably what everybody's wondering.
I can say that wholeheartedly. There's a gateway. And you go to that next life. The thing is, and I think of things technically all the time. You have in airplanes and devices, you have what are called one-way check valves. Well, that means something goes in one direction, doesn't come back. But every once in a while, something does kind of come back through that one-way check valve. And I got to be one of those somethings that came back through that. Now, I believe that a lot of people, when they have near-death experiences, unfortunately, because there is cognitive impairment, maybe a brain injury, things like that, or the months of rehabilitation it takes just to be able to communicate effectively, a lot of those people probably don't remember, or that's something that they just don't have a strong recall of it, or their event didn't lend itself to that recollection. When I woke up, it was like, whoa, I got to tell you where I've been, because I was completely cognitively intact. So I speak from a perspective of somebody who went there and he came right back so that I could speak of it in very clear terms. And when I wrote my book, I wrote, I think it's chapter 21, 22, 23 are the ones that speak of the afterlife experience. Those were the first chapters I wrote, because I'm like, I got to put this down. I got to write this down, because it was so absolutely intense that searching for the words was difficult. Putting them how I wanted them was difficult, but it's like, I got to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. So if someone, in answer to your question, loses someone, just realize they've just gone through a passageway that doesn't allow you to come back. And if it does, if you believe in reincarnation, I don't know anything about that either. They are in a place that is eternal, that is filled with love, that is filled with wholeness, that is filled with people or spirits or whatever that embrace you, that welcome you. And we're here. Some of us get to be here a long time. Some of us don't. And there doesn't seem to always be rhyme or reason to why some people pass so quickly. Maybe there were lessons they needed to learn that were learned, but it's scary to us because all we know is this dimension, and it's all I knew. So if this house were to follow me right now, I'd be like, okay, well, you know, I'll see everybody in a couple minutes because I know the next place. Mm-hmm. And if anything, it feels a little odd to me not to have that fear. It's not like I'm going to stand in front of a car or anything. I love life here. And I realize I have things to do here, but there is definitely a peace in knowing that it just doesn't end here. There is something beyond this. And that's something is magnificent. It is so beyond even what your imagination could even fathom in this world.
Mm-hmm. I believe that as well. I also don't have a fear of death. I don't know why, but I don't. I think it's just the same thing you're saying. Like, I just innately, intuitively believe that that's what will happen. You'll be greeted. You'll be back in love. I do believe in reincarnation. But I think it's up to everybody to do their own deep dive in whatever they believe. But you got a taste of something that I just fully believe. One time I was going through a stressful time in my life, and I woke up one morning with like a feeling I've never experienced in my entire life. It was this peace. It was an overwhelming sense of peace. And I believe that, and I was sleeping and then I woke up. So I believe that something gave me that, something right. either came to me or, because it was indescribable. And all I could ever say was, it's like, it's an overwhelming feeling of peace that I've never had before and I've never had after. And I just believe that that is what's up there for us.
I agree. And to embellish on that a little bit, where we go afterwards, we don't want those who left behind to be upset or hold on to it. Because in the afterlife, we see them as coming in right behind us. And it's sometimes tough to let go of somebody knowing they've gone to a different place. But that love in and of itself means they don't want they don't want you to have pain. They want you to realize they're just somewhere else and you'll see them again.
I definitely believe that as well. And I have a couple of good friends that are mediums and they say that, they're just, you know, in a different frequency. They're on the energy is still there. And the ones that are left behind are the ones that are grieving, right? We're the ones that are in pain. The person that left is not in pain and they don't want us to be in that space. And the lower our vibration with our density of grief and pain, they can't reach us because it just further separates the amount of space between the high vibration and the low vibration. Right. So we have to be true to our feelings. Of course, it's traumatic. It's tragic. It's so sad to lose someone. But we should work on healing and showing them that, appreciating the love and working on that, getting our vibrations back up. That's my opinion on that.
I would agree.
So has this experience changed the way you live life now?
Yes and no. I was always a really happy guy before all of this happened. There are those who I think come back and realize that, my gosh, I wasted life. I wasted time. I wasted energy. And I think we all do that to an extent. But to me, this was a redirection. As much as I love flying and I love aviation, I realized there were other things that I needed to do. That writing that book, for instance, was my therapy. And I've had the good fortune of talking to people who have lost loved ones and said, look, this is what happened to me. And I can say it with complete honesty. So some of how I live life differently, I've always been grateful. But one of the more important things in that gratitude is noticing every little thing that you can be grateful for. Mm-hmm. And in the morning, I say my gratitudes. I talk to God a lot more now because I realize that there is a God, there is a higher power, whatever you want to call God, God does exist. And I speak to that love and I speak to say, thanks for even today, I'm able to walk around. I took a walk with my daughter yesterday. That was so cool. Every little thing means something to me because I realize that everything here is temporary. Everything that we have in any given day could be taken away. And for that reason, to take notice of those things all the more is something I think I do more now than I ever did before.
That's a beautiful thing. And being present in the moment and giving our love. There's a song that my spiritual teacher gave to a group of us one time. It's called I Am Loving Awareness. I can't think of who says it. It's kind of a music song mantra. But when we can be loving awareness of everything that's around us, it's, I don't know, we all get to choose how we're going to live. And you being sent back and sharing your story hopefully hits with people that need it or need some hope or some inspiration or choose how we're going to interact with people on a daily basis. It can be so simple. It doesn't have to be something grandiose.
Yeah, true. It's the littlest things. And you'd be amazed at how you can affect lives in just the smallest ways that somebody's in front of you in line at the grocery store, whatever, just hi, you know, just anything to where to where they weren't expecting anybody to be kind to them in any way, shape, or form that day. I love to engage others in that sense, that you may be the one person who said hello to them that day that gave them, and that seems so small, but it may have rebuilt their hope. It may have fortified something within them that might have been crumbling. And it's a lot of times it's like the little things. There are people who do things in this world that are so beyond what I can even imagine. They are so gracious, so loving, and so caring. But it doesn't have to be enormous. Sometimes it's the most subtle of gestures that mean a lot to somebody.
I do dog rescue on Saturdays. It's my passion. And I meet so many people that tell me their stories because I believe that dogs are unconditional love. And a lot of times someone's lost their dog or they're getting ready to lose their dog. And so there's a lot of emotion that's in exchange during those. And the other week, I had a girl that told me she had a lot of anxiety and she wanted to get a dog. And then she found one. And then she's like, I'm not ready. And she started crying. And I said, that's okay. Like, you don't have to be ready now. The right dog is going to be here for you when it is your time, and it will flow for you. And she was like, can I hug you? And I was like, of course. And then later she sent me this long text and just said, thank you for being so kind to me and all of this. And I was like, I didn't even think I was being like extra kind. I just thought it was, that's how we should show up as human beings.
You should.
And so if we can all take that away, like, what I'm gonna just ask again, what would God ask you? What work do you do?
Well, if God were to ask you, what is your work? I don't think you would tell them your occupation. Your work is something entirely different. So at the end of the day today, when you lay down, you go, okay, what work did I do today? It's not the yard work. It's what did you do for anyone else? A small act of kindness. And I think that contributes to a totality. It doesn't have to be huge. Sometimes it's the most subtle things that mean the greatest to others. It may just give that person a little bit of hope that they needed that day.
Would that be your number one takeaway to the audience, or would you have something else?
It would depend on who in the audience is listening. Yeah, for day-to-day, yeah. If somebody's going through struggles, and there are so many struggles, is one of the things that you say that I heard you mention was the word to reinvent. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that after you said it, and just the few minutes we've been talking here. To reinvent doesn't necessarily mean that you start from zero. It's starting from the lessons you've learned. Think about Thomas Edison when he invented the light bulb. He said every time he made a mistake, it would put him one step closer to the solution. So we don't have to always start from scratch. It's a really good in reinventing yourself and taking the pieces of ourselves that work and building upon those and disposing of those pieces of ourselves that don't work. But you have to recognize them. You have to believe in that. You have to have faith in that. And that's part of, I would say, the message to parlay from when you talk about to reinvent is to realize you're already good. You're already loved. You're already amazing. So build on those things. That's that's the part. That's where the invention continues.
Mm-hmm. I agree. How can the listeners reach out to you? What's the best way for someone? Someone wants to ask you a question, or
I'm on Instagram. I always answer my DMs. I do my very best to. Most of the people reach out are people that are aviation enthusiasts. But my Insta, I haven't posted much lately because I'm not flying, but I still do use the Instagram. It's FIT2FLYA787. FIT2FLYA787.
Okay. Reach out to Tom on Instagram. If you have any questions, he will answer you, hopefully. If he doesn't, message me. and his book is on Amazon. It is Flying and Dying. And it's such an easy read. And it's so fascinating. And I know that you even donate the proceeds from this to
Yeah,
the Heart Association.
Three big things that are near and dear to my heart, no pun intended. American Heart Association. So the profits will head toward American Heart Association, sudden cardiac arrest survivors, and also to putting AEDs in public places, because the gym where I work out, the AED there has been used 4 times, twice in the gym itself, and then there was a restaurant next door where people went into sudden cardiac arrest. It saved 2 of the 4 lives. So who would think that a device just hanging on a wall like that would be, and some probably hang there for years and aren't used, but it's the one that does, and the one that happens to be right there that can make the difference in saving a life. So I want to use proceeds of the book also to make sure that AEDs are very readily accessible in public places.
Do you think people should have them in their homes? Is that even like a thing?
It doesn't hurt. They're not cheap. It wouldn't be a bad idea to have one. But they're in the first aid kit. I think the more important thing, not even just an AED, is to know CPR. It's a simple skill to learn.
I worry that I would be a spaz if something were going on and I would forget how to do it. So refreshing. Remember, I have had training on it as well, but I think that's a good reminder to everybody to have training on that and practice.
The AED is very simple. You just hook it up. It senses what it needs to do. It'll give you, it'll direct you. It's a very simple device to use.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I am fascinated by it. The fact that you are this miracle statistic and that you are able to share, to have that happen to you, have the clear memory, and then be able to share is a gift. And I wish you so much success in sharing it with others, because I think you can impact a tremendous amount of people.
Thank you. Yeah, I hope so. I hope it helps. I hope it helps anybody.
Okay, good. And reach out to Tom. Reach out to Tom, anybody, if he can answer any questions or if you want any moral support. So thank you for being here, Tom.
My pleasure. It's been a pleasure to be here. And it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Yes. And thank you to everybody listening. If you got value from this podcast, please, please, please share it. If you know anybody that might benefit from hearing this, we all are here to help each other. Please share it. Like, I didn't even know your story was going to go to the moral of the story being it's all about love and everything's up there. Like, hello, that's exactly what it is. So thank you for that. And until next time, everyone, remember, don't be afraid to start over. You might like your new story better. We got this.